Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi, the online streaming cinema. For your free trial, go to mubi.com/filmstage. Back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. As always, I am your host, Brian J. Rowan, joined with me today to talk about the newest film by director and writer Damien Chazelle, La La Land. I have Michael Snydell.
Hello.
And Bill Graham.
Woo!
And as I said, we are here today to talk about the movie that enchanted us with its first trailers and images, came strong out of the festival circuit with a lot of buzz. Best picture predictions and best actor and actress predictions coming out of everywhere. That is La La Land, the follow-up to Whiplash by writer-director Damien Chazelle. Before we get into that feature review, let me remind everyone at home, you can be found on Twitter, at Film Stage Show. Find us on Facebook, search for The Film Stage Show. You can also give us a comment and a rating on iTunes, or you can email us your longer thoughts at podcast@thefilmstage.com. And, yeah, that's about it. Nothing much more to say. This will be coming out perilously close to Christmas, so we won't be having a roundtable this week. And I honestly don't know what we're going to do next week, if we're going to be able to find time to record. So this may be the last you hear of us until the new year.
Ever.
Aww.
So happy possible new year. Merry Christmas, definitely. You know,
Happy
we'll be
Hanukkah
back by Martin Luther King and Valentine's Day, so we won't have to get those out of the way right now. But we wanted to bank those salutations. Before we get into our feature review, let me also remind everyone that we are brought to you, as always, by Mubi, the curated streaming online cinema that brings you the best of foreign and independent cinema straight to your computer streaming device. Speaking of streaming devices, I am a Roku man. I have an Apple TV, you know, but my TV is actually a Roku TV. It's a big, nice 4K, 50 or 55 inch. But, man, it used to be such a hassle to get the Roku on it because I had to either stream it on my phone and then live cast it, or I had to switch to a different streaming device, which is just a hassle, but no longer, because it is my honor and my privilege to tell everyone there at home that Mubi now has an app in the Roku store. So if you are like me and have a Roku, you now can stream cinema from all around the world, things that you've never heard of before, things that you may have heard of but didn't know where to find, all directly to your Roku device. And we are giving you the option to have a 30-day free trial of Mubi so that you too can understand the curated wonder. All you have to do is go to mubi.com/filmstage. And we will gift to you for this holiday season 30 days free of Mubi. We're great people. Given cinema.
Still no tagline.
Like that. What was that?
I said still no tagline.
Nope. Mubi.
Yep.
Hasn't given me a tagline yet.
That could be our resolution.
I was about to say New Year's resolution time. Get a goddamn tagline.
It'll be my fondest wish for Christmas.
I know there's a song that's like, this is my only Christmas wish, and I was about to try to improvise a parody, but I will not. So,
are you talking about All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth?
No, I want a hippopotamus for Christmas is what I was thinking of.
Oh.
No, there's that song, like, this is my grown-up Christmas wish.
I don't know. We're going
off
topic.
It makes it sound like someone's going to die from cancer or something.
No, that's Christmas Shoes.
Oh, that's the one. Oh, yeah. Doesn't Patton Oswalt do a bit about that?
He oughta. I mean, everyone should do a bit about Christmas Shoes. I fucking hate that song. It is by far the worst Christmas song that actually has the word Christmas in it.
Ooh.
Anyway, so that's let's, without further ado.
That's a big statement. I'm just saying.
Let's get into
it is.
Let's get into our review of the universally beloved La La Land, starring Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling.
Two options. You either follow my rules or follow my rules. Capisce?
Thank you.
I can do it a different way.
No, that's fine. Thank you very much.
See the decorations. Good luck in the new year.
I just heard you play, and I wanted... That's pretty strange.
All right, so that is the trailer for La La Land. Again, the follow-up to Damien Chazelle's not feature debut, but his breakout hit, Whiplash, which starred Miles
Thank
Keller.
You. Thank you. I heard that the other day. I heard that the other day, and I was just like, someone on the radio was mentioning that Whiplash was his feature debut, and I was like, no, it's not. that's categorically false.
Isn't like, it his third film, actually?
This is his third film.
I think this is his third.
What I'm saying.
Yes. But Whiplash was not his debut. He had one before that. This movie, rather than following a jazz drummer played by Miles Teller, follows in part a jazz pianist played by Ryan Gosling. Also, Emma Stone plays Mia, a struggling actress. These two star-crossed lovers meet and fall in love under the city lights of Los Angeles and chase their dreams together in musical fashion. Or do they? So let's... Let's talk about this film, because as I said in the intro, this movie, people were excited for it, and how could you not be, coming off of Whiplash, getting to see a new Damien Chazelle film. It's got one of the most charismatic young actors we have. It's got Emma Stone, who's great, lover, perfect.
Yes.
And everyone was like chattering about it out of the festivals, like, oh my god, it's so good, it's gonna get the best picture nomination, it's gonna get all this stuff. And I was like, sweet, you know, we could use a movie that unifies us in these turbulent times. A movie
I thought that was Arrival
was the movie that has a theme that is about unification, but is not actually going to unify us. We need a joyful old school Hollywood musical, right, to lift us from the doldrums of a year that has been shit. And here it comes into theaters, La La Land, expanding wider than it had been last week, so that's why we're talking about it. Michael Snydell, you saw this movie 3 months ago.
Yeah.
And we're pretty ecstatic about speaking about it. So let's find out what you thought first, since you've been waiting patiently. What did you think of La La Land?
Well, you know, over the past... I've had the chance to see it twice in the past 3 months. And when I first saw it, I had some very strong feelings about it, in part because I made the mistake of watching a lot of classic musicals right before I saw this, including things like It's Always Fair Weather, things like The Bandwagon, Meet Me in St. Louis for the first time, a number of things that almost anything would pale in comparison to. But I do have to say that those experiences right around that time also gave me a pretty productive way to look at the film and try to figure out my issues with it. So it's taken me a couple months to kind of figure out how I feel about this without just sounding like a curmudgeon who everyone calls a Scrooge the minute I say it's not my favorite movie of the year. So the thing about it is that I have this theory about this year that we've had a number of films that are almost musicals this year. You know, things like Hail Caesar's probably the least like a musical, although it has the No Dame sequence. And then there is things like Sing Street, Moana, Sing, and this. And so there I do have problems with the fact that this is a musical where they can't really sing or dance. But the bigger thing that this communicated to me that I've been thinking about more is that these are just not really characters with real arcs. I think that the thing about it, and it's one thing I thought about with Whiplash, is that in Whiplash, you had Miles Teller as this jazz drummer who is obsessed with purity in music. And it's something that it is all throughout that film, but it doesn't necessarily seem like the director or the film itself is co-opting that same smugness and condescending viewpoint. And this film does have, and this film, La La Land, is very sour. Like, as much as it's about, you know, how it's in this backdrop of, you know, Hollywood mythicism and this, you know, how you'll find a romance and you'll find your dreams. Like, it has this very strange dissonance between the cynicism that it wants to return to every once in a while, and then also this glamour that just isn't a good look and feels very empty by the end. So I think the main thing about this is that there is so much, that there's an illusion of so much going on in this film, but by the end, I just have no sense of who these characters are beyond some very basic traits. But that's a bigger problem than when the movie is also so obsessed with this idea of authenticity and purity, and it keeps wanting to name drop, you know, past musicals and all kinds of things, but it never really feels like it has anything to say either about its own view of LA or why it's so enamored with Hollywood. So it's just a really strange experience that by the end I kept wanting it to be a more traditional musical and reach for those heights, and every time it just came up empty for me. That was a lot of rambling, but I'm really interested to get into this with you guys, because this movie, I've been thinking about it for quite a few months, as I've said.
All right, Bill Graham, what were your initial thoughts on La La Land?
So I saw this about a month and a half ago or so, and one thing that I have to kind of get up front is the dancing, the music. I really enjoyed all of those aspects. I think for the fact that this guy's wanted to make a musical for a little while, and that, you know, he finally got his chance, his opportunity after Whiplash was, I guess it was a mild success. I mean, critically, it was a smash, but I don't think it made all that much money. I'm clicking on it right now to see. For a budget of $3.3 million, it made $49 million. So, I mean, I guess considering that, it was a huge success, but it still didn't get to – like, not very many people saw the film ultimately, even though it made $49 million. And I think that was – that's really unfortunate, because that is definitely one of my favorite films of 2014. There were a number of films like that had this kind of dark edge to them, and I love that film for its braveness of just going for it. And so I was really, really excited to see this film. And the music in that in particular was excellent, and so it's not a surprise to me that the music here is really good. The dancing is really good, and I really enjoyed the opening probably hour or so of this film. I think it really kind of finds a nice pace that it kind of slowly settles into, and before you know it, it's turned away from being kind of more emphasized on being a musical
and a dancing kind of, you know, situation where it turns into more of just like a kind of stock love story in a way. And I think, unfortunately, that's when the film is it's when the film loses a lot of pacing, but it's also when the film kind of loses its way a little bit. And I think it's unfortunate because I think had the film continued to use the musical numbers throughout, I think it would have just elevated everything. It would have kept this kind of glamorous glaze to it. But I think he's uninterested in that. And so that's kind of ultimately what the film becomes, is what Chazelle wants from it and what he's trying to do by telling the story. I think what he is doing, the story he's telling ultimately, from what I got out of it, was pretty interesting and pretty, it's not super uplifting. And that's surprising given the way that this film is marketed, given the way that this film has been kind of praised as this love letter to Hollywood and this, that, and the other. And it's kind of like, well, it does that, but it also has other things on its mind. And it also like talks trash to Hollywood. It also kind of speaks a little ill of California and, you know, all of these other things, and it's having fun with it and it's doing multiple things at the same time. Overall, I think the acting is really good. You know, I could watch Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling on screen all day. Like, there's no issue there. I think they have really good chemistry. I like their kind of meet cute and everything like that. But if you're going into this film thinking that this is going to be such an uplifting and romantic, Hollywood, you know, throwback, you're probably in for a surprise. This film has a lot more on its mind than just something as easy as that. But overall, I enjoyed the film. But I definitely have some issues that I'm looking forward to talking to when we kind of dive into it more.
To jump off of what Bill said, I believe that this film has much more up its sleeve, but not much more on its mind. This, I don't know, like, I'm not going to judge a movie on what it billed itself as, because I know that marketing... Mm-hmm. And everything moves differently mm-hmm. than the actual creative process and blah, blah, blah. But the movie for the first 30 minutes sells itself in its full creative glory as a musical. It opens mm-hmm. with a giant music set piece that takes place on a freeway on ramp, I guess. And it's great. And
what is it? It's the legendary California highway system that's always fucking packed. And,
yeah, it's the LA
jam packs.
Anyway,
it's every Coke commercial you've ever seen combined into a musical set piece.
Yes. So yeah, these people are jumping around and singing and dancing, and there's bright poppy primary colors, and like I don't know how exactly they filmed it, but like they filmed it in a way that it appears as though it's a single uninterrupted shot. Mm-hmm. And it's fun, and it's a little loose. It's like it's a little dirty. It's not got the pop and the rigidity of some old Hollywood musicals, which is fine. Like, it feels a little bit like an affectation. It also feels like maybe we just don't have the time or energy to get that good at singing and dancing anymore. That happens, and then we are introduced to our first character, Mia, and she gets her little musical dance number thing. And that one is also fun. And at that point, I was like, you know, those two songs sounded really similar. I wonder if they used the same themes. Having listened to both of them since then, they don't. They just sound similar. Then Ryan Gosling gets his introduction, which is also fun and has like another uninterrupted scene with him and his sister. And then, I don't know, man. It feels like the movie just gets tired. Like, it feels like about a half an hour or 45 minutes in, the movie itself just like hunches down into a chair and lets out a long breath and is like, okay, you got to give me a second. And then like so many drunk guys at a bar, a second turns into an hour and a half, and then the night is over. And they never get back up, and you are ultimately disappointed with the time you spent together. It's... why do this if you're not gonna do it? You know? Like, why start off with this ragged, kind of awesome and energized thing, and then turn into, like, this mopey, morose, shoegazing, just, like, relationship mm-hmm. drama between these two ciphers who just represent, like, very basic ideas of the type of people you'd find in L.A., one of whom is just, like, downright insufferable, and the other of whom is cute and fun, but, like, doesn't have a lot else going on. Like, these people don't have mm-hmm. lives outside of these arbitrary dreams that they've been set to have.
There are no other characters in this movie than these two people.
It's just, and like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, when, what, like, when is the next song gonna happen? And like, and then it does, and then there's a thing that it's, I can't get into it because it's a spoiler. Sure. But like, it's just a disappointment. It's just like a massive letdown. Because like, I could forgive thin characters and simple plotting if you still brought some of that luster and that energy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But to just like deflate entirely like that, and then give them like two arguments that are supposed to inject some drama and tension into things, it's like. I don't know. This movie was ultimately very disappointing, and like, you can recommend it a little bit for the shaggy dog theatricality of the first act, but then after that, it's just I don't want to say a nightmare. It's a job to get through the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. Can I say something real quick? That's probably going to be an inflammatory statement.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I like the artist more.
Ooh, I don't even know how to respond to that.
Wow. Okay. Well, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, okay, my first gut reaction to that is the artist actually commits to its sensibility more than this does.
I would agree with that.
Yep. I don't like the artist's sensibility. But
no, but I think I could respect the artist commits. More.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna
get shit for that. I know I am, but that's fine.
That's fair. No, I'm not really on Twitter.
I think that's a fair thing. I was talking to Jordan last night and compared this to Across the Universe. And I'm wondering how much this will be will have a similar effect after this comes out.
When you were mentioning musicals in this year, I can't remember off the top of my head. Did you mention Jungle Book?
Oh no, I did not mention Jungle Book.
Mm.
Because that's like a musical that's sort of ashamed to be a musical.
Yeah,
no, it is. It, yeah, it is. Two numbers. Yeah,
and this movie has like three and a half.
Mm-hmm. I think it repeats. I mean, it depends on what you're talking about. If you're talking about song and dance, I think it's got like three numbers. But I think it's got a couple of extra musical numbers in it where people sing, but. It's not like the song and dance, like everybody's breaking out in
there's
song.
There's a couple of dances without songs. There's a couple of songs without dances. And then there's a couple of song and dance numbers. And like, and again, that's like what I'm saying. Like the movie just gets tired. It's just like, you can feel the air leave it. You can mm-hmm. feel the movie just being like, I can't keep up this pace. And I am so sorry that I led you to believe I could.
Yeah.
Have a seat.
Well, okay.
Maybe I can make these two dance, like not physically dance because we're all very tired, but like emotionally, like puppets. Maybe I can inject some completely baseless tension into this completely like just cookie cutter romance. I don't understand what people are watching when they see this or seeing when they watch this. Like,
I think this is a better romance than a musical.
I think that the first 30 minutes are a better musical than a romance. I think that it's, and then after that point, it's kind of like, who gives a shit what it's doing? Because even when it sort of tries to make a thematic statement about its own lack of energy, it's like, well, congratulations. You've made a crappy first-time Sundance film And you don't even keep up, like, some of the aesthetic virtues that you'd built up earlier. Like, all the color leaves the movie. The camera ceases to be an active participant. And I just feel like I'm watching a bunch of people in mid-shot sitting at a table arguing over chicken.
Well, I think the thing is that it is, as we're talking about commitment, like not fully committing to this, it wants to be a musical. As a lot of people have talked about, it's a musical for people who don't like musicals, because it's not actually showing us these heavily choreographed long musical sequences. Like, there are people who, you know, you watch Singing in the Rain with, and they're saying, when are we going to get to the next scene? And that is this sensibility. The camera is constantly moving in this, and it's as you're saying, there's splashy primary colors and the camera swerving and panning and jumping into pools, and it's all moving so much that it's supposed to give that momentum, but it also has that emotional distance and that impression of cynicism and a sense of Hollywood isn't real. And that's supposed to not gloss over. That's supposed to make this ultimately more palpable, both for people who don't like musicals, but also for people who are more cynical. So they feel like they're more allowed to like this. And that's potentially a bad faith assumption on my part, but that's the only way I can read a movie, as you're saying, Brian, that has the first 30 to 40 minutes fully, you know, dives into tap sequences and, you know, backlot romances, and then only returns to it near the end as like a reminder that, hey, this is what we were actually watching. Obviously, we can get into that in spoilers, but I mean, I am... Well, I'm wondering
again,
whether
Mike, to jump off of something that you said. I mean, a Boca burger is a burger for people that don't want an actual burger. And just like a Boca burger, like, you have a promise of something, and then if you want that
thing, I love you, you Brian.
If you want
my girlfriend's
a burger
a vegetarian.
And you get a Boca
what are you
burger,
trying to do here?
if you want a burger and you get a Boca burger, you're going to be fucking disappointed with that Boca burger. And if you don't want a burger, maybe you should just get a fucking salad and not try to emulate a burger in a way that just makes it worse. Like, don't make this movie if you're not going to make this movie. And if you're going to try to use it as an aesthetic comment on the narrative, make the narrative better.
Yeah.
Make these characters better. Make them more.
This sounds
because
facetious,
as,
but I generally don't know.
As singing and dancing avatars, they're fine. But as characters that I have to sit in a silent room with, they're a nightmare.
What, you don't want to hear Sebastian explain jazz to you and why it's great?
Oh, my God. Guys, I think we all know that amongst the three of us, I'm probably the guy who cares about the social face of a movie the least, you know? I love diversity. I love being sensitive to other countries and cultures. But, like, that's not going to make or break a movie for me. This movie made it really hard for me to keep up that apathy because of the amount of times that Ryan Gosling was sitting at a chair surrounded by black people talking about jazz. And, like, all of them are either not paying attention or, like, they're nodding along. And, like, what? Damien Chazelle has to stop making movies about jazz that don't have any speaking roles for an African American.
John Legend.
Yeah, John Legend's in there, but the funny thing is that, like, he dresses down Ryan Gosling for being a traditionalist and then says, like, you know, it's in the trailer, like, how are you going to save jazz if you're, like, jazz is about revolution. Like, how are you going to save it if you're so stuck in the past? And then the movie takes this very successful African-American musician and makes him an object of derision and smarm for Ryan Gosling to kind of knowingly smirk at as he makes money off of his band.
Yeah.
That's a very shitty interaction.
Like, what was that?
I said that's a very shitty interaction. It really is.
Yeah.
The way that that storyline kind of unfolds is just like, oh Jesus. And does John Legend get married twice?
Are you talking about Rosemary gets married to some other guy?
They looked very, very. Am I just putting my foot in my mouth? Did they not look very similar?
I mean, that guy didn't have any dialogue, so I mean, we're implicit.
Because when I first saw him, I was like, oh, that's a weird way to have John Legend in this movie. And then I see him again, and I'm like, what is going on here?
Those are different people.
They are different people. Well, I will say that for a minute, I was like, oh, this is why Ryan Gosling hates him. He's dating his sister.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Okay, cool.
It's not.
Cool.
It's a different person. They have a similar build, but once you like actually get a good look at their faces, which granted...
Yeah, I did.
His brother-in-law they're not in gets the like film for 13 seconds of screen time. So
exactly. So I was just like, what is this?
As a white man, Bill, I'm going to give you the it's okay, you're not secretly a racist blessing. But like again, I don't care about things like that usually, but it's getting uncomfortable.
Well, here's the question here that, you know, to bring it back to Whiplash, I very much, and it doesn't matter, obviously, it doesn't make it a bad movie if a movie condones bad people. That's not what I'm saying. But I read Whiplash as the film thinking that that Miles Teller was a sadistic asshole in that movie. And I'm now very much going back and forth seeing La La Land, wondering whether we're supposed to take Sebastian. Are we supposed to also take him as someone insufferable? Are we supposed to find him charming and cute in his constant elitism? Like, I think that's the thing that drives me crazy about this movie. I don't need the movie to tip its hand, but it is so dissonant in the way that it works. It's so dissonant in the ways it represents its characters and the ways that it's constructed. And we can speak about this later, but as you said, like, it's like this movie only reminds itself that it's a musical towards the end. I don't know. I'm just curious. Like, how did you guys read Sebastian's character, for instance?
For me personally, it was difficult to know because it seems like he is supposed to come off a little Don Drapery. Like, you respect the hell out of his talent, but you wouldn't want to be his friend. But
I don't really find him that talented either.
I think the movie wants us to believe he is talented. I think the movie cues us to his talent. At least as a piano player, you know, like people tell him that he's a good piano player. Even John Legend, successful artist in this film and in real life, he tells him he's talented. And so I'm willing to take the movie on faith for that. He's able to play like a Moog solo one-handed. So that's got to mean something to someone. But yeah, it's
does what I'm asking even matter? I guess the other question.
It does, because I think you have to know what the movie feels about its characters in order to see what the movie's trying to say. And that goes with movies that are ambivalent towards their characters.
Sure.
Because if a movie is like, I'm not going to judge this man, but I would like you to, then I know that that movie is asking me to engage with that character and myself in order to come to a conclusion. Now, if a movie is saying to me, oh, this is a cool guy, I'm just going to accept that until he does something to prove the movie wrong, at which case I have to do the mental calculation. Does the movie know that he's stopped being a cool guy? Or did the people who make this believe that that was forgivable or that it was justified or what? And in this movie, it's difficult to know what we're supposed to think of Ryan Gosling, because I found him at first to be a little bit of like an autistic savant. But then he just kind of, it's hard to know, because by the time we really like dispense with the musical set pieces and like get down to brass tacks with the nitty gritty relationship nonsense, their actions are so nonsensical to the characters that they have built up that I just don't know. And at that moment, the movie feels like it's going on romantic film autopilot. And sure. I stopped really trying to think about what the movie was trying to do on a character level, because I knew what it was hoping to do on a plot level.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like there's no more.
Yeah.
So, I feel Bill, like there's no more.
What did you think?
As far as Ryan Gosling's character?
Yeah, like, are we supposed to like this guy?
I think Chazelle doesn't mind that he puts assholes in his films. I don't think Chazelle minds that. And, you know, Whiplash is definitely a point where, you know, a lot of people were mentioning Whiplash, and I'll try to steer this back towards La La Land in just a second, but a lot of people were kind of criticizing Whiplash for being a film that was kind of celebrating kind of the old school way of teaching and just being like no bullshit and not and like dragging people through the mud and being like, look, like if you want to pursue greatness, this is how it has to be done. You know, you have to really put your, you have to bleed for it. And I think a lot of people kind of missed the fact that Miles Teller the whole time is a willing participant in being abused by his own teacher. It's not one of those situations where it's like, oh, he's like, this guy is just his, you know, gateway. No, he actively wanted to impress that teacher the entire time. The entire time he had this kind of aura and legendary status to him. And so when he came to that school, he knew he wanted to get that guy's approval and adoration. And it's like, okay, so that's what that film kind of ends up being, is two flawed characters just going at it, right? This film, I don't necessarily see a flawed character that Gosling is kind of bumping up against, except for society has moved on and no longer listens to jazz, and he's just pissed off about that. And you know, you're right, he is kind of an elitist. He's I love, there's an interaction that he has with his sister, Rosemary DeWitt, who, by the way, needs to be in more movies all the time. Mm-hmm. And she's like, she's talking about potentially hooking him up, and he gets a phone number for like a blind date, and she's like, just call her. Just talk to her. I'm sure she's nice. And he's like, what if she doesn't like jazz? And I was just like, oh, shut the fuck up. I was just like, gotta be kidding me. You gotta be like, I get it, but your character can't say that out loud. Like, really? Like, come on, man. And I'm supposed to be rooting for this guy. Like, that really soured me to everything that he was going to do from that point on. And so, yeah, he is an elitist, and he is just kind of this insufferable guy for a while in the film. And he's got his charms. He's got his, you know, I mean, it's fucking Ryan Gosling, like, you know, whatever. I don't know. I don't like his character all that much. Even towards the end, I think he's being rewarded for not doing much of anything. Like, I don't know. This film has a lot of character issues that I'm just more impressed with the story that it's trying, or not even the story, the ultimate mood that it's kind of painting. Because I think what this film is basically doing is it's taking the idea of the Hollywood romance musical, and it's basically dragging it through our reality, and our reality is messy and it's gritty and it's dirty and it's just raw, and things just don't fucking go your way sometimes. And that's kind of the reality that this film is dragging a musical through, and I think that's where I kind of connected to it as a film. Now, does it make it a good film? That's up for debate. Obviously, there's a lot of people out there that really, really love this film. So I think it's time to jump into spoilers. Sure.
Well, I wanted to build what you were saying. Like the concept of dragging a musical through our real world.
Sounds very great, interesting.
But like, it doesn't count if you just stop being a musical. Because at that point,
you've just given up.
And like, none of the songs convey the complicated nature of our human condition. Like,
there's a single song in here that actually tells you about a character, and it's the audition one. That's the only one where you find out about Mia. And what you find out about Mia is that she had an aunt who influenced her by watching a lot of classic movies with her.
Yeah.
Like that is the big character moment. And this is after
that may be a bit of a spoiler.
I mean, okay. I'll All say right, this. Sorry. I watched Sing Street on Friday. Mm-hmm. Have either of you seen Sing Street?
Yes. I haven't watched it yet.
Okay. It's on Netflix streaming. Check it out. I loved Sing Street. It's a movie about a kid who wants to impress a girl. She claims to be a model, so he says, "Oh, well, my band is shooting a music video. You should
that movie. Okay.
Right. Yeah. But he doesn't have a band. He doesn't have a band at all. So he gets like five strangers from school to help him form a band. And with the help of his older brother, he discovers music and starts writing it. And so you get a bunch of awesome songs that this band makes that all reflect the narrative and tell you something about these characters in a really deep and meaningful way. Not just in the fact that one of them is writing it, but in the way that the other character responds to them. And it's like a super compelling, really fun movie, even though it goes to some very, very dark places. But like, that's what a musical dragged through our dark, gritty reality should be. And this is like, I'm going to hook him in with the bright colors and the dancing, and then I'm going to drop the floor out from under them and give them the most rote romance drama that I can think of.
And that one's even set in the 80s.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, like, I guess, like, would you recommend this movie to people, Michael Snydell?
I already have, and they didn't like it.
Okay. Bill Graham, would you recommend this movie to people?
Yeah, I do recommend this film to people because the unfortunate reality is that this film is widely praised right now. It is likely to win an Oscar. And this is a film that, you know, look, this is, to me, this is a better movie in a lot of ways than Birth of a Nation. But I think just like Birth of a Nation, that film had to be seen because it was part of the culture and it's part of this thing that's going on in our reality. And, you know, it's just like a big hit TV show or anything else like that. It's like, maybe it's not necessarily built and executed in my particular taste, but would I recommend it to people? Absolutely, because I think there's a lot of people out there that are probably going to enjoy this, and I definitely want to have that conversation with them afterwards and be like, why?
Is it inflammatory, you have to see a movie because of anything other than the quality of the movie to be just a specious argument. So I'm going to say no. Like, you don't have to. I mean, that's for you. That's fine. But my personal thing, just because this movie's going to win an Oscar doesn't mean you got to see it. I mean,
no.
Crash won Best Picture.
Like,
sure.
Let's be real. The Oscars are stupid. In terms of, like, the brain that directs what gets an Oscar is an idiot's brain.
Sometimes it gets it right, and then oftentimes...
A fucking blonde squirrel's going to find a nut sometime, but, like, let's not pretend that the Oscars actually reward quality.
No.
They don't.
But it is unfortunately the Super Bowl of Hollywood, and that's kind of their big celebration. And so I think, you know, and look, I'm a big proponent of, I want people to be part of the culture. And so unfortunately, sometimes you have to digest things that are shitty if you want to be part of the culture, right?
Which
not
is why
everybody
our next
really loves.
Podcast will be on Collateral Beauty.
Unfortunately, not everybody loves football, but there's a shit ton more people that watch the Super Bowl than actually like football, right?
But that's like an argument for watching the Oscars, not for watching the movie. Because like when I decide to watch the Super Bowl after not having followed football for the entire season, I don't go back and watch every single game that led to the Super Bowl. You know?
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm just going to say, I had a friend who said, like, oh, La La Land, should I go see that? And I was like, oh, I haven't seen it yet. I'll let you know when I'm out. And I got out and I was like, nah, no, you don't. No, watch Sing Street. Sing Street's on Netflix. Like, this is.
Well, I don't have a counter. I'll tell them to watch The Artist.
Or watch one more
in there.
An actual musical.
Another piece of nostalgic backpacking that Hollywood gave too much credit to. The Artist.
Just go fucking watch Whiplash, because apparently not enough people have seen that movie.
No, that's a great movie. And it was one of the reasons I was excited for this one. And now I'm wondering, when I say that I like Damien Chazelle because of Whiplash, am I really saying that I like whoever edited Whiplash?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This guy makes killer opening sequences, by the way. Yeah. Like this opening musical is great. I love it. I even love that it ends by saying winter. I love that.
Yeah, that was
while
funny.
All these people are like out in like bright, you know, Ryan Gosling's got his fucking 80s car that has the convertible down, and you're just like, oh, okay. And then yeah, that opening sequence in Whiplash is just, oh gosh, it's so good. And yeah, so
all right, well let's spoil this bitch. So how does this movie end? First,
it ends in two ways.
With the best part
alert.
Of the movie.
Well, what happens is that like him and Mia get like into a fight, and this is fucking bullshit to me, because this is one of those movie fights that only happens because people in movies, when the writer says these people have to have a fight, will say all of the stupidest shit to each other. Rather than like the two words that could possibly end the fight. So like she's wondering, because he's on tour with this band, The Messengers, and he comes home and he makes dinner for them and it's so cute. She's like, she had just left him a message saying how much she missed him, and they sit down to eat, and he's like, well, you know, after this tour, we're going to have to record, and then we're going to have to tour again. And this is like shocking to her, because I guess she's just not into music. But then she starts like berating him. She's like, well, why aren't you following your dream of opening this club that you keep talking about? But like, all he would have to say is like, well, that dream requires money. I've only been doing this for, we know this because of the titles, like 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't just stop now. I have to keep making money. But instead he's like talking about like, maybe this is my dream, like maybe this is what I want to do. And you know, she's like, you just like that the people like you because you're popular. And he says, well, you're an actress, what do you know?
Well, and I have to put in, it doesn't look like he's having that bad of a time. No, not until the photo shoot.
Yeah, he's getting like a little yeah. kick out of it, you know. He's like, eh,
yeah,
in this cheeky. Yeah.
He likes his ego being massaged, let's be honest.
He is yeah. doing great. And she should be like, instead of saying like, why have you given up on your dream? Again, like, that's like, I want to be a writer, you know? And if I went to work for like 3 months and my wife was just like, well, you have this job in this office, does that mean you've given up on your dream? And I'm like, no, but you know, you and the baby like eating and living in a house, like this mm-hmm. is a necessary evil. And I have also completed 2 novels and every day sock away like another 10,000 words in the new one. Like, this is how dreams are made. Piecemeal, over time, because that's what it is. And instead, like, they just get in this fight and he insults her, I guess, by calling her an actress.
Yeah, I don't understand that. Like,
no, he says specifically that you should know all about the importance of image. You're an actress.
Which
as
is
in
a
that
fair
there's
point.
No substance.
Like, that's a fair point.
Yeah.
you guys are also not making him sound like a gigantic asshole in this scene.
Oh, he is.
Oh, no, he is.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, their conversation is, like, tortured so that none of them are saying the right thing, but not from, like, a place of character. It's just in a place of,
sure.
Oh, okay, well, here are the three things they can't say because that would diffuse the tension.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it's the classic, like, sitcom maneuver where it's like, oh, her one-woman show is about to open and he's going to go there. But, oh, no, there's a photography thing and he has to stay for that. Even though John Legend literally says, like, four times, is that cool? Like, can you still do that?
I think the best joke in the movie is that we see none of her one-woman show after it's built up for literally 30 to 45 minutes.
Yeah. Because, I mean, well, you know, as much as you might love her, like, who the fuck wants to go see a one-woman show? And that's not just about women. I wouldn't want to see a one-man show either. It's not what I want. But so she does this thing. Only like 14 people show up.
Including the three roommates who you forgot existed.
and he doesn't make it because he's busy at this stupid fucking photo shoot that he got talked into at the last moment.
Right.
And he's a dumbass who didn't realize that was going to overlap.
Yeah. Because you're right, Bill, because he's a dumbass. Also at this photo shoot, he gets, I don't even know how to describe this fucking photographer.
He's a
neon demon reject.
he's like walking talking symbolism machine.
who's the guy that
power to the keyboard? All right, now play something. And he's like, play something. And the guy's like, yeah, you're a musician, aren't you?
Now bite your upper lip.
He's like, you're a musician, aren't you? And it's like Ryan Gosling's like, my God, am I a musician or am I a corporate whore who's missing his girlfriend's one woman show? He shows up. She's pissed. Okay. She goes home to Nevada.
Okay.
So the
guy that I imagine that he is supposed to represent is Terry Richardson. If you know who that is, he's just this, I don't know. He's briefly in the Amy. He's briefly in the Amy documentary. And he takes a lot of pictures for Rolling Stone magazine. He's a very famous photographer, but he's also kind of, he's very much a sleazeball as well.
He looks like a goddamn sleazeball.
Yeah.
I just Googled him.
Okay. Yeah.
I feel like he would frequent adult movie theaters way too often.
The character, never mind, unimportant. And then he gets a call. There was apparently like a casting director who happened to come to this one woman show and is like, oh, I want this girl for my movie. So he has to go and find her. And he gives her some speech about not giving up on your dreams. Drives her back to LA, sits with her in the waiting room. And then this casting director is like, so we're going to, there is no character, no script yet. We're going to spend 4 months creating the character and building the story around her. We're going to shoot in Paris. That's going to be 3 months. Which I would love to hate the movie that they make. Cause that just sounds terrible. And they're like, so just tell us a story. And so she starts telling the story about her aunt, and then it goes into this solo, like, ballad about dreamers and stuff. And then her and Ryan Gosling are sitting out after, and she says, well, I'll apparently hear back from them in a couple of days. And he's like, well, what about us? And, oh, I don't know, like, what's going to happen? And then it says winter again. And then it says 5 years later. And she's made it, and she's a star, and there's a coffee scene that cements that because it's a mirror of what happened when we first saw her. And then she goes home, and there's a baby and some fucking guy who we don't know and have never met, but he's obviously her husband, and they're driving somewhere, and then she's all, let's just stop and get some food somewhere else because I don't want to go wherever we're going. And so they pull off, And then I guess after dinner, like everyone does in LA, they decide to go for a leisurely stroll. And then her husband's apparently into jazz, I guess, because he hears music and he's like, hey, here's this random club. Let's go in this random club. And she's all like, oh, okay. And then she goes into the random club and it's Seb's, which is the name that she offered up instead of Chicken on a Stick, which is the name that he wanted to make his club. He even got the little music apostrophe. Jesus. And they're down there.
Yep, yep.
And he goes and he's like introducing people and then he sees her and he's all like, whoa. And then he goes and plays a song. And then we get this review of like her fantasy of what their life should have and could have been like.
And a survey of every musical from the 60s and 70s.
Yeah. And then her and her husband leave. And then I'm pretty sure that's how it 70s, ends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
I
have a couple.
It teases you.
I have a couple problems with this ending. Like, who is this guy she's with? Like, we hadn't met him before, right?
Not that
no,
I'm aware
of course
of.
Not. No, I mean, that's
he's like a producer.
Right. Well, I just wanted to get that out of the way because, like, I at first thought that he was a guy we'd met earlier in the film, and he's not.
Okay.
But he seems like a very charming guy. Seems really.
No, nice. he's not the initial boyfriend that she's dating. Really? Then like just completely breaks up with him, and then mid stride also falls in love with Ryan Gosling at the same time.
Yeah.
You're just like oh okay, so that's one way to like break up with somebody. Just walk out on dinner. Okay.
She said something like, I can't do this or I have to go.
Yeah.
And then she just left.
Yeah.
This poor guy and his like brother and his sister-in-law.
Who were insufferable, but you know,
yeah.
Only mainly insufferable because they were rich and isolated. And that's the thing that, you know,
right. And so she goes to be,
if you're not rich and isolated, yeah.
she goes to be with a completely different insufferable person. But so, but like, here's the thing is that, so she's viewing this great romantic life they could have had together, but we don't really know why they broke up.
Mm-hmm.
Like we can make assumptions, like that's in our power. I could say, oh, he was really unwilling to compromise what his dream was, which is a lie because he joined John Legend's band. So obviously he is.
Yeah, I don't know why they don't reconnect. And right. And the really shitty thing is the reality of this film that is actually unfolds on screen is they don't even keep in contact.
Yeah, I'm she like, apparently has what? No idea.
and I'm like, wait a second. Hold on. This is the guy that basically gave you a career. He talked you into going into this interview. He basically pushed you the entire time. You were ready to give up on your dream. Now you're a big name actress. Like, has she never had a fucking interview? And someone been like, hey, so how'd you break into the industry? And she could be like, well, let me tell you this story about this guy that I was dating at the time that was a huge asshole. And then he drugged me to this interview. And that's how I'm famous now. And it's like, oh, and they would probably be like, does he have a name? And she would mention it and they'd be like, oh, cool. He just opened up a jazz bar down the road. Did you know that?
Yeah. Like,
it's just like, come on.
We should point out this is a modern film. Like,
yes.
People have cell phones. There are computers.
Facebook. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Facebook. But like, even just allowing for that not to be a thing, I just like, I wasn't invested enough for their breakup to mean something to me. I don't know why they broke up, so I don't know what thematic point it's trying to make. It really just seems like, again, like the movie got tired of being creative and inventive and just said, like, okay, so we could end it after this whole, like, her big song and, like, they don't know what the future is and, like, maybe we want to leave the audience not knowing what the future is. And then some other aspect of Damien Chazelle's brain, because he's the only writer credited, was like, nah, man, what you got to do is you got to slap another fucking 15 minutes on this monster and show them
go over the 2-hour mark,
which we all know is the problem for Bill.
Guys, I thought this was actually the most creative and inventive thing in the entire movie. I just don't think the movie remotely earns it. So I guess I'm coming at the same thing what you're saying, but I think you're getting, you guys have thought more about its connection than I think the screenwriters wanted to think about the concrete way to connect these things. They wanted simply a way to make it feel – to give this a bittersweetness and a grace that the movie just doesn't have. Well, but you do that and you have – you have the literal Scrubs finale scene where they're watching where they're watching what their life could have been on a projector, and it's like the whole time you're thinking like, man, you really put a lot of effort into the choreography here, the cinematography here. You have, you know, Matt's painted backdrops that are, you know, more vivid than anything else in the entire film. And it's like, man, this would be a really interesting short film. But it's like that scene is, as you guys say, it feels so auxiliary. And it is I don't think it has that flagging energy that you're speaking of, Brian, but I do think that the way that the film gets there only works as an attempt to, you know, give this a, you know, elegiac. Is that how I pronounce that word? I haven't used that word in too long. Thank you. It's been a long time since I used that word. An elegiac quality. Yeah, I know. It's a good Monday.
It's a sheen of profundity that the movie wholly doesn't earn.
Exactly.
Because here's the other thing. Her little mind play, her life plays out exactly the same, only he's in it.
Yeah.
Which leads me to believe that she's not wondering about a future that they would have had that's different. She's just grafting him on. And she has reached her goal. So what the fuck was the problem? It's not like she has a kid. It's not like she doesn't have a kid and in her vision she has a kid. Because she has a kid in both. It's not like in one she's a bohemian who never gets married and in the other she is living a traditional life. Because, again, she's living a traditional life in both her fantasy and her reality. It's
but
just
it, but
this
it is
one
just
guy swapped for the other guy who we don't know.
Yeah, but it's just supposed to be that vague idea that what life could you have had?
That's, the same fucking that's life, apparently.
Yeah.
Except with this guy and a different color or a son instead of a daughter.
Yeah.
And I guess living in Paris, right?
I honestly don't know. But the I'll say that the guy, her husband, is played by Tom Everett Scott, who played the drummer in That Thing You Do. So maybe that has something to do with it.
I don't know about that.
I just love that connection, though.
So
I don't know. It's just like you can feel the movie straining to say, like, look at this, like. We set up these star-crossed lovers, and look, they didn't end up together. They got their dreams, but they didn't get each other. But it's like, who gives a shit? Their romance didn't seem that once in a lifetime. They both got what they wanted. There's no tragedy here.
Well, is there a reading that Mia isn't pursuing her passion? I mean, yes, I understand that the two versions we saw, but the two versions also include, you know, the one woman show, and it includes her rise, but it is one of a more, not direct route. I'm wondering if there is another reading that we can take that there is. Or excuse me, that we're not giving enough credit between the two possible scenarios, that there is something else that we're missing or not mentioning.
I don't think so.
I don't think no.
Yeah.
Like, cause she wants to be an actress, right? Like that's kind of her thing. At some point he says to her, you're not an actress, you're a playwright. And she's like, oh, cool. And so she writes this one woman show. And then she gets the opportunity to be in this movie where she builds her own character. And at that point, I was thinking, oh, what if we find her later and she's not an actress, but she is a scribe, like a screenwriter. But she's not. She has her face on a billboard. She has the exact same coffee shop encounter as the first rich person does.
Sure.
She seems fine. That's what she wanted. That's not the thing that Ryan Gosling believed she wanted. That's what she wanted. But the other crazy thing is that it's not even like, oh, she broke free of his "you want to be a playwright" spell and found her acting on her own, because he literally drove her to the audition.
What they could have done to really kind of put a nail in the coffin is they could have shown her commute in the morning every single day in her dream world, and it's on that same California highway and there's no traffic ever. And just like, oh, okay. So this is the reward? This is the dreamland? This is what's what's ultimately better? Just no traffic on that California speedway. That's it. Just like, high ideas. Everybody in Los Angeles complains about that one fucking highway, and it's like, all right, well, here's the dream world. I guess maybe it's because too many fucking people film musicals on those highway.
I just don't know. Like, by that point, I had stopped caring. Like, and I didn't. I my wife and I stood outside of our car trying to figure out, like, what it meant and why we should care. And, like, neither of us could come up with anything. Like, again, their relationship isn't strong enough or novel enough or...
Yeah, I hate these romances where film... And I get, like... Look, I'm king of wanting films to be under 2 hours or be really fucking awesome. But like, I get it. Like, but man, the whole idea of one big argument and then they're broken up and that's it for the rest of their life. And I'm just like, guys, Jesus, yeah, really? Like, y'all are going to have disputes. Y'all are going to have arguments. Like, that's not a real good reason.
Well guys, they do make up. They make up after that. I think it's just the idea that they were never, it's just supposed to be a person who you know at one point in your life, and they don't actually become, you know, a major thing. He drives her to the audition because it just happens. You guys never met people in your life who had major influences, or excuse me, were a major influence on who you became, but just kind of fell out?
Not like a fucking girlfriend that moved in with me, no.
Yeah.
Every romantic partner in my life, I could point at the reason it didn't work, and that reason was never... I don't even know what to say about them and their problem. Like, was their problem that they were so focused on their dreams that they had lost sight of each other? Or was it literally like, I'm going to be in Paris for 3 months and I don't think it's going to work because I'm never coming back, even though I'm totally coming back. Like, I thought that dance dream sequence was going to show us the reason they didn't work together. And I was on board.
I don't think that film...
What was that?
I don't think this film has any interest in that articulation.
But then there's nothing there. Like...
I'm not disagreeing, Brian. I'm just saying.
And like,
I'm trying to understand here too.
And then fucking like Titanic, over the course of 2 days, built a more singular, meaningful, romantic pairing, a deeper love that I cared about than this movie was able to do over the course of a year in plot time.
Yeah.
Like when they fought, I wasn't like, oh no, they're breaking up. You know, this fucking movie couldn't even get me the emotional response of a particularly good episode of How I Met Your Mother. It's just, these are two charming as shit actors.
Yeah.
There's no reason for them to be this, like, removed from each other. Like, when they have that whole at the movies moment, and then they go to the observatory and they dance. I was like, well, but I don't feel like you're there yet. Like, like, guys, maybe you should like go home and then have like a third date and then
see how it goes.
Yeah. Like, you're moving. So rarely do I say to movie characters, you're moving way too fast. Cause in the movies, everything goes fast. But these two, I was like, no, guys, you're not feeling it yet. Like, I'm a pretty good judge of chemistry, and you two guys need to work a little longer before you start dancing amongst planets.
Well, I think it's supposed to move in a little bit of a daze in the sense of, you know, especially since we have designations of seasons, trying to show that we've had long periods of time go past. But so that season is supposed to give you an illusion of depth. You know, I was kind of surprised early on when they move in and, you know, you get that whole montage of, you know, that honeymoon period. And then it seems like a couple months has passed and she's working on her one woman show and he's touring. And so I think we are supposed to get the sense that there is a lot more time than we actually see reflected in their relationship, which I think is a overall weakness in the writing, right? Is that I don't have a sense of who these people are as individuals, let alone why they work as a couple, right? other than the fact that they both have dreams, I guess.
Pretty much. But like, yeah, that's the thing. Like, if I were to meet someone and then run into them a year later, we wouldn't be in love and on the verge of getting married. We would still be acting pretty much the same way we did the first time we met. Now, if we spent every day together, obviously our relationship would have changed. But I never felt that shift on a character level for these two.
Mm-hmm.
Again, in Titanic, they go from strangers to lovers and like the one true passion of each other's life very quickly and super effectively. Like, that's one of the things you can't deny in that movie, is that those two really feel like they've loved a lifetime in a couple of days. And these two feel like first date 7 months later. And that's a problem. That's a problem in this movie, especially because it wants to end the way it does, especially because it takes away the glitz and the glamour of the musical parts. Like, you can't do that. It's just not allowed.
Cause you're essentially stripping down your own, when you strip it down to those components, then you're going to, you know, let everyone see what you had at the most basic level.
Right.
And as you're saying, it's not nearly enough even for stars of this caliber.
Which again would be fine if that was the point the movie was making, but given her little reverie at the end.
Yeah.
And the fact that it ends in the same place she's in now, and she leaves with a kind of wistful glance backwards, I think that the movie is saying that she is living in this like fantasy at the moment of, oh, if only, rather than, oh, I'm fine without you because I have what I would have wanted anyway.
Well, what do you guys make of that audition scene in general? It's such kind of an odd scene in compared to the rest of the movie, honestly.
She has her sing-along, not her sing-along, her solo, and there's no accoutrement to it, you know, it's just her singing. I guarantee that a bunch of fucking theater kids are going to start using that as an audition song. Fucking insufferable, you know, men and women in high school who want to be the lead at Into the Woods, and they're going to sing that song. It's the new fucking Cup song, I bet you. And it seems designed for that, and it has that, and that's both me being glib, but also, like, I think that's what the movie wants it to be. It is literally her audition song. I don't think it's particularly impactful or meaningful.
But it has that halo of prestige because of the stars and the director and that just dash of cynicism.
Yeah, shallow people eat that shit up.
I thought about Birdman a lot in relation to this film.
I was just about to... Bill, I literally just checked. Because I was like, man, I wonder if we lost Bill. And then
no.
And then Mike said,
I'm here.
Birdman, and you just erupted.
I've never heard Bill have such a strong reaction to anything in the entire time I've been on the podcast.
That fucking movie.
I don't know. Bill, what did you... let's get away from Birdman so we can...
What do you make of the audition scene?
Yeah.
The audition scene, to me, I think it's...
I think what's interesting about the audition scene for me is that it is one of those classic moments where we get to see both sides of an audition where someone is intensely interested in the person that they're interviewing, and then also the side where most struggling actors would, and even actors, you know, and that's the thing is, like, Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling were people that have auditioned for things. This is not uncommon that a lot of these big name stars did this exact same shit where they went through probably 1,000 auditions and bombed them, you know, either in, you know, because of them or because of the auditioner, right? The person leading the audition is just like, I don't fucking care. Like, we just got to get a number. I'm not into you. Like, I took 5 seconds and I looked at you and I was like, nope. And, but I have to be nice to you because you drove all this way and, you know, you got dressed up. And there's thousands of you sitting outside in the lobby. So I have to give you your 2 minutes, but, sure, you know, I'm not going to give you much more. And I think it's interesting because what happens is she comes in and she's basically been dog-eared for this role. And, like, she is not used to how that feels. And I think it's one of the most charming moments in the film is to watch her realization as an actress. Kind of, it dawns on her that, oh, we're actually going to interact. Like, you're not just going to come in and have me read some lines and go, okay, bye. Mm-hmm. You know, we're actually going to interact. And she gets kind of her dream handed to her in a way. And I'm sure that's how it feels when you land an audition and, you know, you get a call back. It seems like she's, like, never gotten a call back, right? But it's sure. Finally one of those things where it's just like, oh, you know, sometimes you get a call back and, you know, you go into the audition and you just feel like this is gonna change things. And that's, I think, that moment, it highlights it. But I mean, the song, the musical number in the middle of it it's nice. I think it's okay, but I don't know. I think at that point in the film, I was just ready to see them be successful. I was tired of them being drugged through the mud. I don't know. I think the film, the sequence works. I think I could care less about the musical number in the middle of it.
Am I alone in I honestly thought for a little while in this movie that neither of them were going to be successful but end up together, which I think would have been very interesting coming from a young filmmaker who has become, you know,
wait. Say that one more time.
Sorry. I said, am I alone in thinking for part of the film that potentially neither of them would become stars but still potentially end up together?
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I definitely thought they were going to fail.
I almost think that would have been very interesting in relation to, you know, the fact that it stars huge Hollywood actors and major director.
I think that's what's that would have
been
crazy to me about this movie is that, like, it gives them their dreams but, like, robs them of their love and seems to think that that's something. But, like, again, their love wasn't that fantastic. I think it would have been more interesting to keep them in this mediocre relationship and deny them their dreams.
Bill, speaking about the audition scene, too, reminds me that I guess Ryan Gosling, you know, just out of the blue kind of gets his moment, too, when John Legend approaches him in that lunch. It's not like he, you know, wowed anybody. It's someone from way back, you know, is pulling him into a soulless or a potentially soulless endeavor to him.
Right. Well, there's that there's a whole song called Someone in the Crowd, I think.
Yeah.
And it's all about, like, in the crowd could be the one you need to know. I think that's literally the lyric from it. And so it's saying, like, you know, hey, it's LA, baby. We can, that shit can happen and you can suddenly become famous because of them.
I just shouldn't have to try this hard to try to find a thematic coherency here.
I think the fact that we've spent so long trying says a lot about us and our willingness to engage with this movie. And I think the fact that none of us seems to feel really strongly about putting forward what it is tells us how little this movie sought to meet us halfway. And I think that that might be our cue to stop.
Yep. Oh, can I talk about Star Wars now?
This movie?
Yeah, no, I want to hear a bit about Star Wars.
I have nothing else to say about this fucking movie. Right,
so that's La La Land. It's out now. See it or don't. I don't give a shit. What a
what we're going to be talking about
for
the next
me
three
as
months,
one of I... the most what the hell were they talking about movies? People, like get
like,
into fights
I don't
on
know.
Fucking
that was
Twitter
Birdman
about this
for
movie.
Me.
Yeah,
that?
They do. Yeah, if you say something bad about this movie, it's automatically like people are like, what movie did you watch? And I'm just like, what movie did you watch?
Because the movie is like Poppy and Brighton has singing and is a romance, people are like, oh, you're so cynical. And it's like, no, this movie's just lazy.
Yeah.
Well, and what I heard about the I guess now is the time that we're going to talk about some of the critical praise that's being heaped on this film. But what I heard was that this film destroyed someone that was kind of like this macho kind of or kind of this dude bro kind of like, you know, isn't into romances and, you know, it doesn't affect him and things like that. And this
Which
movie like destroyed him
right there.
And I'm just like, what destroyed you? The romance in the middle of this film is, yeah, it's so mediocre. It's so milk toast. It's so just like, oh, okay. So they're beautiful and they get along.
And then
that's it.
And it's just like being destroyed by a movie. Like Manchester by the Sea nearly put me in a coma for 2 weeks. Like that's being destroyed by a movie.
So I watched this film kind of in a weird moment where I watched three films in a row, and the first film was A Monster Call, which we still haven't talked about, but that movie destroyed me. And then I watched this and I was ready, and then it was just like, nah. And then I watched Elle and I was just like, this is a very weird, weird day for me. So like this movie was teed up and ready to melt my heart because I had just saw a dark and foreboding children's horror story. And then I watched this movie and I was just like, yeah, okay. And so like, it's not that I wasn't in the mood to see this movie. I was definitely like, I was excited. I was like, yeah. And like, I hadn't watched any of the trailers except for, I think, what movie I watched another movie like 2 or 3 days before that in a theater amongst the public, and so I was subdued into like watching trailers, and I watched one of the trailers for this and I was like, oh, so that's what this movie's gonna be about. I was like, oh cool, it's gonna be kind of like a love story and they're gonna be kind of like, oh okay cool. And then I watched it, I was just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, no. So, I've been listening to the chatter about this movie being amazing, and I wanted it to be. And I was in love with the trailer, like everyone else. And it's just, you know,
guys, like I loved Whiplash. Like I really loved Whiplash. Like God, I will go to bat any day for that film.
Yeah.
And this film is just.
But that movie had. You're right.
You're so right though, Brian, because like the camera dies in this film. Like Whiplash had such good camera movement, and you're right. Like this film has a lot of fun with the musical numbers where it's moving around the characters and it's jumping into pools and, you know, it's doing all this fun stuff. And I guess now they don't have to hire a crane or a helicopter to do some of these like big overhead tracking shots. I guess now they can just use a fucking drone or something. But mm-hmm. I was just like, oh man, like he's going in, he's going out, he's going all over the place. And then, yeah, it's like someone shot his drone out of the sky. And you're just like, well,
well, we lost
shit.
The drone. So it's all mid shots now.
Yep. I guess we got to have a static camera.
Can we just do that quote out of context on the tweet?
just like someone shot his drone out of the sky. Who stole Damien Chazelle's drone? That's what I want to know.
It's like, who stole the Falcon from the Royal Tenenbaum set? Okay, so that's all for La La Land. We've spent now close to an hour and 20 minutes shitting on this movie, which there's what we send out as a tweet.
We're gonna end up on a list. It'll be fun.
I'm fucking fine with that.
The naughty list.
Yeah. Oh no, we're gonna get coal in our stockings from the cinematic gods. Film Twitter is going to be furious at us. If you have any thoughts, you can send them to us at Film Stage Show podcast to thefilmstage.com. Bill Graham, you can have 2 minutes to talk about Star Wars Rogue One starting now.
What the fuck was that? Okay. So I loved the droid that's played by Alan Tudyk, which I don't think y'all talked about enough on the podcast, unfortunately. He is delightful. He is the heart and soul of that film. I'm not going to mention that. He is awesome throughout that film. Best new character. Too bad we will not see him anymore. But I do want to say that I think the podcast that y'all did was actually really good. It was one of my favorite listens so far of all the Star Wars podcasts that I've listened to. I think it is unfortunate, Brian, that you watched the trailers and you became attached to some of those imagery and then they were not in the film. I think that's just super fucking unfortunate because it did kind of pepper your opinion for a little bit of the film. You did a good job of kind of straying away from it for most of the film or most of the podcast. But I do want to say that the music, having listened to it again, I think the music is kind of bland, but that's not anything more than The Force Awakens really gave me. I think more than anything, this film, it to me, what it does is it just proves that there is enough story kind of on the fringes of Star Wars to have fun. But I do really, really wish that they would get away from, I saw someone mention on Facebook, they said, I really wish that they could make a Star Wars film that didn't mention a fucking Death Star ever. Like, yeah. And we knew that this was that film going in, but man,
you're out of time.
Can we get away from the Skywalker clan and the Death Star? Please, please get away from them. I hope the Han Solo film has nothing to do with any of these other characters except Han Solo and Chewie. Just let them be.
Make the Han Solo one about the Kessel Run.
Bill, as someone who's on the fence, without getting into spoilers, I mean, what is your response to, you know, the general tone of the podcast about its over reverence to the rest of the series? Did that bother you?
No, this is not The Force Awakens at all. This film feels wholly original. This film feels like it's intended to be a standalone in a lot of ways, and it's executed and kind of it's executed in that way. And I think it's a success in being a standalone and being a successful spinoff. I don't think The Force Awakens, and I enjoyed that film a lot. That film is point blank. It is A New Hope. It is a lot of these other films just kind of redone and remastered and brought in. There are some sequences in this film that I think are going to stand the test of time. There's not as many as some of the sequences in The Force Awakens, and I think that's unfortunate. But I enjoyed the film. I think it has a lot of fun and it's doing a lot of interesting things. I think more than anything, Rogue One stubs its toe more than it is a bad film. It stubs its toe with the Grand Moff Tarkin thing. It stubs its toe with some of these other aspects where you're just like, what are you doing? You were doing so well. And, you know, the fact that, yeah, I think someone was mentioning either in this podcast or another one that I was listening to that this entire film series now, since Disney's taken it over, is going to have excellent casting. So, yeah.
All right. Well, that was Bill's opinion on Rogue One and weirdly also our Rogue One podcast.
It was a review. I gave you a review on your podcast. How about
that? We're getting pretty damn meta here.
Yeah. So let's kill this. Let's kill it all. We're done for today. Let me remind everyone that you can now get Mubi on Roku devices. So now the best streaming site on the web can be yours for your Roku TV or Roku stick. All you have to do to get your free 30-day trial is go to mubi.com/filmstage and you'll be able to see the hand-curated selection of independent, foreign, and all-around awesome films that Mubi has to offer. Again, that I was about to say number. That website is mubi.com/filmstage and you will get 30 days free to try out Mubi. Mubi, still no tagline. One day. Let's tell the fine people at home where we can be found. And before we do that, let me remind everyone that we probably won't be back next week, but we will be back. So follow us on the internets to know what we will be watching and when it will be up. So let's start off with Bill Graham. Where can we find you online?
You can find me watching The Artist, live tweeting it at CableBFG. On Twitter, you can also find me writing about movies on the Film Stage and freshfiction.tv. I should have a review of A Monster Calls soon.
All right, Michael Snydell.
You can find me defending critically derided musicals like Mamma Mia on Twitter at Snydell. And I have done some writing lately. I actually had a review of Fences go up on the Film Stage on Friday.
Ooh, I saw that.
I'm looking forward to talking about it, Phil. And then I'll have a review of Sing going up on Pace this week and some Film Stage list stuff, including my own personal list within the next week.
Woo! All right, and you can find me on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan, my personal site, dearfilm.net, where I have my written review of Rogue One. And I, too, have been adding my voice to the lists that we at the Film Stage have been making. I believe our best directorial debut just went up today.
It did.
Check that out to know some of the best things about film this year.
Guys, 10 Cloverfield Lane came out this year. That is bonkers.
It's been a long goddamn year.
Yes, it has.
So did 13 Hours.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Soldiers of Benghazi. All right, that is all for today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us and tune in, not next week, but whenever the hell we post the next episode.